through the silence, that we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us, a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a cold of silence, and it can't go on.
playing through the matrix, it's hard for most people to believe that their future has been mapped out for them, basically, collectively, that is. And it's the same for every other country. We're in a global society. We've been owned, basically, for a long time with new owners. It's always been owners of society down through the ages. Even in small tribal groups, you always had someone at the top who eventually became, through muscle, basically, and relatives, the kingpin, who stayed in with hereditary lineages. And they eventually got armies and kept everybody under control, so they could live better than they could, you see. Because one of the basic fears of humanity is poverty. Poverty, sickness, lack of friends, lack of acquaintances, lack of relatives, lack of help, basically. And when that becomes exaggerated, we turn into pretty, well, monsters in a sense. But all down through the ages, you've had psychopaths who get to the top, unfortunately, in this system, because they're the most cunning and ruthless, and they're quite happy at the top. They know they're psychopaths at the top. They call themselves different terms, of course, but they are psychopaths, and they do believe in the Darwinian version, that basically, if you take Darwin's theories, the psychopaths are the natural ones to be at the top. That's what Darwin basically was stating with his whole theory of evolution, survival of the fittest. Well, if a psychopath can manipulate millions of people, or even a few thousand people, then he deserves to be to lead. That's what they truly believe amongst themselves at the top. And they, strangely enough, have the flaw in human nature. Psychopathy is not called a mental illness, it's called a personality disorder by those, basically, that are the ordinary people. You don't call them survivalists by the Darwinian code, you call them people with disorders. We are used to the ones at the bottom getting caught by police for various misdemeanors and so on, or smashing windows and grabbing jewelry because they fancied it at the time. The clever ones can basically restrain themselves and their impulse for having immediate self-gratification, and they learn that from their parents as well growing up. So when they're born into powerful families of inbred psychopaths, you know that they always have bad things in store for the general public off of whom they live. They also bring in systems with them, systems that we all have to live by. And we are so used to hearing about democracy and government and communism and Nazism and all these different systems. But all these systems really were brought in by psychopathic personalities that are very good at getting followers to sacrifice themselves on their behalf. That's a good thing about groups. You can always use the group. And the psychopaths hire teams in think tanks to study groups. They've got so much data on groups and large populations, they know exactly how to tweak the emotions so that the public will go into a war mode and sacrifice themselves for enemies or for terrorism, or sacrifice themselves for sustainability, or whatever the cause happens to be. But ordinary folk love causes, you see, because part of living is always having a goal, an objective, a reason for living. And the psychopaths tend to give us theirs, so we're living artificial systems following the psychopath's dreams. And they knew in the post-capitalist era, that in the post-productive era, when they created China to be the manufacturer of the planet, and believe you me, China did not pull itself up by its own bootstraps. It was set up by the West, modern China, through all the different treaties that were signed that allowed the big industries to move over to China. Your governments did that on behalf of the international bankers. But they also, now it's they're in post-production, we're called service economies. And those who invest are basically investing on services and resources. That's the big one. This is the next phase post-capitalists, where they used to invest in companies and bring up companies that produce things. Now we're post-production, so they're investing, let's say, in basically resources and things that we need to live. That also means we have to cut back on all the things that we need to live. And it always starts with the ones at the bottom first who get hit the hardest, and that's part of the agenda for depopulation as well. I said when 2001 came along, I think it was that night on a radio show, I said, you're going to see rationing coming in. All the types of things you see in a war scenario will be introduced, restrictions on travel, ID cards, all that stuff. And right down to eventually, you will see people moving. That mass exodus is of people just like refugees. Only it will be internally, and there will be no one bombing them from the air. This is the big, big plan as they go into this new sustainable economy, understand. But in the process, as they flood the Western countries with immigration to make get the appearance that we are, a real appearance, that we are now overcrowded, as the native populations are declining by the UN's own statistics, to bring them in under the guise that they've got to increase the population because the native ones are not having enough children to pay off the national debts. And I've read the articles on the air from the big high chutzpahs that have said so. But it also is to destroy existing cultures until there is a non-culture. The culture that's coming out of all of these cultures is basically a dog-eat-dog culture because survival is coming to the surface once again of winners and losers. In fact, that's why Jack Satali, in one of his books called Millennium, Winners and Losers in the New World Order, called it that, and he should know since he works at the United Nations. It's winners and losers. And the cohesive bonds that used to hold cultures together are gone. People don't help each other out anymore. Governments also discourage that for a long time by creating services and other authorities over the public. And people really would help each other out in times of stress or trouble. And that's ideal for controllers, for totalitarian, tyrannical controllers. They love that kind of scenario. And there's so much fallout that goes along with this. We've seen it happening in places like Britain before it comes elsewhere, although it is catching up in Australia, Canada, and elsewhere, especially since they give you national health services, which initially run well, maybe 30 years ago, but or 40, and then they start bringing them down until they're dysfunctional, and they still keep the authority part of the national health service, but they don't give you much of a service. Here's an article here for those in the States that wonder about Obama's, let's stop even talking about Obama, but the guy's a figurehead, like they're all figureheads at the top. And Hillary was touting that stuff long before Obama was even heard of. So they want to bring in a healthcare system in the U.S. based basically on sustainability. That's what they mean is that how much bucks are going to, they're willing to put out on a post-industrial, non-productive society to do with a new type of economy. That's what it's all about. And to bring down the populations. This article here is from Britain to give you an idea of where you're going. From theguardian.co.uk, Thursday 25th. The National Health Services Trust, litany of failure, neglect, insensitivity, and ineptitude. Healthcare Commission announced report on Staffordshire hospital death rate. This is just one hospital, giving you for example. It says the Francis report found the hospital had too few doctors, especially A&E, and it says a lack of compassion among staff, patients left lying in their own urine and feces, others falling, sometimes sustaining a serious injury, or even dying as a result, unseen by ward personnel. Meals not provided or put out of reach, uncaring staff rejecting requests from patients and relatives for help, lamentable hygiene standards, family members having to clean, feed, or help their loved ones to get to the toilets, too few doctors, especially in the A&E, reluctance, it says here, among patients to ask for hard-pressed staff to provide proper care, and fear among staff about the consequences of not meeting targets. That's how they run it now in this bureaucratic socialist system. Targets, targets, targets go before the care itself. And the patients, it says, are scared to ask the staff who are hard-pressed. They've cut the staff back to the bare bones with a few qualified nurses, and the rest of them are generally nursing assistants. That's coming and starting already in the States. Don't believe Obama, or the plan, is that Obama word again? Don't believe the plan isn't going ahead. They always put it actually in before they pass it in law. And I talked to enough people in the States to see it happening as they close down whole wards in big major hospitals in the States. Getting back to this article, Robert Francis's failure, neglect, insensitivity, chronic ineptitude, and poor decision-making at Mid-Staffordshire National Health Service Foundation Trust. Many people who went into Stafford Hospital expecting to be well looked after instead suffered horrific experiences that will haunt them and their loved ones for the rest of their lives. It says here that relatives are actually taking home the bed linen, changing their own relatives in the hospital, taking the bed linen home that's soiled and cleaning it themselves. That's how great Great Britain is. And the round report that this present government in the States is going to copy is basing all of its advice on copying the British system. Because I have the RAND report here. Incredible. It says, on continence and bladder and bowel care, he found requests for assistance to use a bedpan or to get to and from the toilet were not responded to. Patients were often left in commodes or in the toilet for far too long. They were also often left in sheets soiled with urine and feces for considerable periods of time. Considerable suffering, distress, and embarrassment were caused to patients as a result. The situation was so bad that families resorted to changing beds and washing soiled bedding at home. Some staff were dismissive of the needs of patients and their families. Francis writes, the mission is described with patients struggling to care for themselves, leading to injury and loss of dignity. Back after this break. And we're cutting through the matrix, letting that guitar wheel for a bit because I feel like reeling a bit tonight myself. Because we're in an awful situation as we go down the tubes, basically, in this managed society, this socialist society, where experts will rule our lives. They're already doing it from birth to the grave, and shortly be telling us where to live and how to live. They're already telling us how to live, and now we're all being taught to be sustainable, meaning cut back and cut back until you're living like the third world. Now, last night I talked about Mumbai and India as a model slum, basically, that Prince Charles advocates that we can learn a lot from, because the people seem so happy living amongst all the sewage and stuff and eating very little, and they're awful chewy, and there's very little crime. They didn't mention there's also a mafia running, even in that kind of circumstances, a mafia running up to the top dog. And this these millions of people are crammed into about a square mile in the centre of Mumbai. And Mumbai itself is putting up massive skyscrapers. Some are just to hold or house one family. Skyscrapers, maybe 54 floors, just for one family. These are the Brahmins, you see, that own the industry in India and get all the grants coming from the various countries through different means, through their governments. Put money into economic development in other countries, and the Brahmins are the rulers of that system, have been for thousands of years. But the people in the open cesspits that they call sustainable, that Prince Charles was advocating, it's astonishing that they want us to really learn to get on together, cram together, living on top of each other, with maybe 20 to a house or something like that. And that's what they're advocating, this kind of lifestyle. Incredible. Anyway, I found links for those shows, and you should really get them quick before maybe someone pulls them, who knows how things are these days. I find each time that I mention something and explain it to the public, they're pulled very quickly. A lot of articles I've read, too, over the years from the newspapers and science magazines often get pulled that very night after the show. So grab them quick and maybe copy them for future use. Because we're living, as you know, dire times, and the public truly have no idea of how fast it's going to plummet. And the organization, the incredible, massive organization above us all, that's interwoven, dealing with every minute part of society to make it all happen the way we're talking about right here. It's all intermeshed together. We know the population's been taken down over the years. The West was pretty quiet when the Western governments were supplying methods to bring down the populations of third world countries, because we don't it never occurs to them that if your governments are in a global society, well, if they're sterilizing people through inoculations and free tetanus shots in India and Africa, then perhaps they're also doing the same kind of thing to you back home. And of course, they have been, because they envisaged this present era at the beginning of the 20th century when they set up the League of Nations with its Department of Population Control. That became the United Nations with its Department of Population Control. And they mentioned using inoculations to sterilize and bring on diseases so that people would have to die earlier. They're very, very economically inclined, these types. They love doing their sums. They're great with pencils. They're pretty useless at the top with anything else, you know. But they love using pencils and adding things up and subtracting them. And when they get too lazy for that, they can hire massive organizations to do it all for them. You can't imagine the kind of cash that the big foundations doles out every year to what they call the activist groups, the correct activist groups. They're the ones that they have set up themselves, these non-governmental organizations that champion all the causes towards their own imprisonment. You have no idea the money that is spent, as in the trillions across the world. This is the parallel governmental system, and no one votes them in, folks, but they have advocates on every government board ruling over you. Here's another coincidence. Well, coincidence, you see. Most people believe in coincidence theories. Root killer castrates male frogs, as a new study says. And there have been a thousand studies on this kind of thing, and it's always a brand new discovery each time they mention it. CNN.com. It says, recent studies have raised concerns about the potential health risks of atrazine, a herbicide widely used on farms. It's the most promoted, actually. Atrazine, a root killer readily used in the Midwestern United States and other agricultural areas of the world, can chemically castrate male frogs and turn some into females, according to another new study, I think I've done about 25 before. New research suggests the herbicide may be a cause of amphibian declines around the globe, said biologists at the University of California, Berkeley, who conducted the study. The findings are being published this week in the Journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. These studies are handy for the big boys who have all this data and who started these agendas, because it lets them know how much saturation there is in the ground and how it's affecting humans. That's what these studies are actually for. I hope you realize that. Researchers found that long-term exposure to low levels of atrazine, 2.5 parts per billion of water, emasculated three-quarters of laboratory frogs and turned 1 in 10 into females. Scientists believe that pesticide interferes with endocrine hormones, such as estrogen and testosterone, but it also affects, guess what, higher animals, too. Back with more after this break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Hi, folks. This is Alan Watts, and we're cutting through the matrix. Reading an article about another way to basically alter male and female with the use of chemicals. These things actually trigger. You can switch on and off your endocrine system. You can switch them on and off, literally. And you can switch them off forever. All on forever, basically. So it's a whole field in itself. It's part of chemical warfare. What I'm reading here, it's not a mistake. It's not a mistake. It's chemical warfare. You've all heard of chemical warfare. It's a very old area of science. And this is chemical warfare. Of course, you all put it down to coincidence, I'm sure. They've known this stuff forever. Same about the bisphenol A and the plastics and all the rest of it. They make a fad that is what called a plastic bottle, try to pretend they're a good jaffy, you know. Same thing. Anyway, it goes on to say in this article here, the effects of atrazine in the long term have been shown to demasculize or chemically castrate frogs, combined with complete feminization of some animals, said lead researcher Tyron B. Hayes, biologist and herpetologist at the University of Berkeley. We need to reconfigure how we evaluate chemicals in the environment and impact on environmental health and public health, he said. Well, that's already they found that 10% exposed genetic male frogs developed into functional females who copulated with unexposed males and produced viable eggs. Other 90% of exposed male frogs expressed decreasing libido, with reduced sperm count. Doesn't that sound awful like what's happening to the men today, from the United Nations' own statistics? And decreased fertility, amongst other findings. Syngenta, a Swiss company that's the largest manufacturer of atrazine, has challenged the validity of Hayden's case study. Of course they always do. And they get a guy who worked for the company to refute it, who lives in Canada, Dr. Keith Solomon, I guess it is, environmental toxicologist at the University of Guelph, Ontario, who was an advisor to Syngenta, a consultant to them. And it goes on and on and on. And it gives you all the different areas that they use this stuff in, and the different studies that have previously been done as well, 2006 and before it, and so on, how much is in the groundwater, and obviously it's in your food. It's in your food, obviously, because plants soak up moisture from the ground, as you all know, but also soaks up the chemicals that are put on them, too. Hence also the cancers that are going on. And if you're down to the bottom, you see another organization, NRDC, Health Environment Program. They did their own research, too. They say they believe the research by Hayes and the other University of California Berkeley biologists is valid. That's also a skeptical of Syngenta's claims. She says that their tactic is to flood the scientific literature with negative data to negate the other studies, she said. It's only their studies that show that atrazine is not an endocrine disruptor, and that's what they call it, endocrine disruptors. Epigenetics as well, they trigger your gene sequencing and your hormones to be turned on and off. So there's another way that they're getting you through chemical warfare. And they know it, folks. And you can argue with big bucks, and you can pay off the FDA and everybody else, as they do with every other big pharma company. You think they're out there to protect you? I've read the articles here containing the emails from big pharma to employees or guys on the board of the FDA saying who their friends are and who is hostile to them, so they can get various drugs passed and various chemicals passed. I've read them on the air, their own emails. They were disclosed during hearings. Now, the big nonsense that they're pushing, of course, is sustainability and austerity for the new system that we've all to serve, as the elites live off, as they've always done, and to eradicate all the middle classes, basically. And they're using the climate scam to do it, and it doesn't matter how much data comes out to the contrary, they must convince at least one generation. You've got no knowledge of past weather, since that's very, very old. Most of the older folk can't even remember what the weather was like 4 years ago, unfortunately. That's why they picked this great scam. But they're using the climate change, as they call it now, rather than just global warming, to push it all ahead. And here's another report that came out on February 26, 2010. U.S. climate data compromised by sensors' proximity to heat sources, critics say. Now, I've read this before, so another newspaper with the same thing, FoxNews.com. The critical cog in the machine that drives the theory of global warming may be compromised as temperature sensors across the U.S. appear to be exposed to heat sources that some critics say is corrupting their information. The predicted temperature changes, it shows darker red, indicating greater change due to global warming, based on data that scientists, polemics, and the public are now questioning. They show you the pictures. It says, the critical cog machine that drives the theory of global warming is a small white box not too far from where you live. Inside the box is a thermometer that tracks the local temperature, which in turn becomes part of a data trail for the monitoring of climate change on Earth. But the problem is, nearly every single weather station the U.S. government uses to measure the country's surface temperature may be compromised. The sensors are supposed to be in empty clearings, that's like wood lots and so on. Instead, they're exposed to crackling electronics and other likely sources of heat from exhaust pipes and trash-burning barrels to chimneys and human graves, but also encased in concrete jungles, the cities, where everything's reflected, all the heat's reflected back off the concrete. The National Climate Data Center uses this massive network of sensors to determine daily highs and lows at the 1,219 weather stations in its historical climatology network. It existed since 1892, but only in the last decade has it come under intense scrutiny to determine whether the figures it measures can be trusted. Now, I mentioned before, too, in a previous article, that over 1,250 or more stations have been closed down in the coldest regions, so they weren't factoring all that into their nonsense as well. They know what they're doing. If they want the right kind of data, they just make sure that the circumstances comply, and they'll get the right kind of data. Just close down all the ones in the cold areas. They had over 1,000, 1,500 across Russia. They're all closed as well, the northern parts of Russia and Siberia. All gone. Now, there's a couple of callers on the line. I'll take them before I rant on anymore. And it was Debbie from Texas. Are you there, Debbie?
Yes. Hi, Alan.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm hanging on here with the skin of my teeth.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that because you are one of the only times in my day when I don't feel completely alienated from the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in Texas,
mm-hmm.
and I have called in one time before. My question to you, Alan, tonight is, Rick Perry just won the primary here last night. He's Republican. He's our current governor. And we had a really good Tea Party person that was going against him, and she barely got 18% of the vote. I feel like the vote may or may not have been rigged. I don't know, but it's just absolutely impossible for me to understand or believe that, you know, Texans can not even remember that Perry has stood for tried to make the Gardasil injections mandatory.
That's right.
He attended Bilderberger this last year, that he tried to land grab, land that has been in my family and my friends' families for many generations in order to put the Trans-Texas Corridor through from Mexico to Canada with the North American Union. It's hard for me to understand how 50% of the voters could not remember that.
Mm-hmm. But dealing with yourself, though, everything really, really is rigged. You see, the fact that he went to the Bilderberger meeting, it's true with everyone who becomes a president or a prime minister of any country. If they go to the Bilderberger, they're the guy that's going to get picked in any election that comes up. And that's just the facts. Every single one in the last 10 years, like 15 years I can remember, went to the Bilderbergers, and they always got into whatever position they ran for right after it. Yeah.
Right. And honestly, I've been listening to you and Alex Jones for several years. I just finished The Next Million Years by Charles Galton Darwin, and he states there specifically that the further income disparity increases, the less likely that democracy can be effective or ever rule. And in fact, we're in communism. And my question to you is, what do we do? I mean, I feel very hopeless now, and I just don't think I've felt like this hopeless before.
Yeah. But the thing you can do, really, is to start to concentrate on yourself, number one. Don't wait for any group or any big... There's going to be no big change at the top. There hasn't been, as I say, since World War II, or even before World War II. But this is an agenda you're living through. They had even the end of the industrial era mapped out before World War II started. I mean, you were going to start to pull out the... And I've got books from the Council on Foreign Relations, Royal Institute for International Affairs, going back to 1938, talking about building up China to be a manufacturer of the planet, basically, at the main meeting in Australia that year, 1938, I think it was. And we're simply living a script here. And they've already brainwashed a young generation coming up right now from kindergarten right through school into the greening and self-sacrifice is typical of mass movements which they create. That the only successful movements in this world that succeed are those that are officially approved and created by those who already rule to bring in the next phase of their network. You can't compete with that kind of money or organization. I've got foundations here. There's one there, it's the UN Foundation, just created last year, I think it was. Mm-hmm. This foundation was given $1 billion to start off with by the Ted Turner Fund. But you cannot compete with the money they dole out to the radical front organizations and NGOs. You can't do that. You cannot change the system from within, but also taking care of any possible rebellion. They've been building up an internal army for 25 years in mm-hmm. preparation for what's to come. So you've got to take care of yourself. That's the first thing. And if you can get a few people around you of like mind, who will certainly help each other, won't run off in tough times or give up when the going gets tough. Because self-preservation is going to be awfully important as we go through the next 10 years or more. It's not going to get better. I've read so many articles from the top themselves, from governments, and from all the different foundations and think tanks that work for governments. They're simply an appendage, or the governments are an appendage of the foundations, actually. And they've got it all mapped out for the next 100 years, including the declining population, the ideal population for the West by the year 2050. They will not change their course or their track. This new economy, as I say, is based on sustainability and food. And they will eventually be dishing out food and money to every region, as they call it. And you will have to take down your population as they cut back on the money and the food and so on that you are allowed. The United Nations was set up to do that, to be the distributor of all food on the mm-hmm. planet, the different regions. This is their agenda. They knew what they say because they know that they have no opposition. All they have to do is to humor the public through all of this, as they always do. And it's coming into being as we live. We see it happening. It would take something massive, even a military coup, to alter the direction in which we're going right now. Even Russia has asked, Putin asked, he said America is becoming the most dangerous nation to the whole world because it's bringing in a form of communism across the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And they said it's a strange thing that they dismantle the Berlin Wall only to put it around the whole coastline of America. And it's right, too, because under communism, the state was in charge of all goods and means of production and all food and everything. And when the bank bailout happened, now they've got the say in the banking. They're working together, of course, with the bank, for the banks, I should say. And you now have the same system of the interwoven government and the means of production. And there's no higher means of it than the money system itself. Without money, there's no production of any kind. But it's also to do with this whole brand new system that's coming in based on sustainability and the reduction of populations, because they don't need the masses anymore. They don't need factory workers in the West. They don't need laborers in the West. They can always bring in laborers from any third world country that will be far cheaper for them. And if they die off in the process, as they're getting worked to death, they'll bring in more. That's the same technique as the real Nazi death camps, where the Nazi death camps were based not just on bringing people in and killing them. They whipped them almost to death, and then they killed them when they were no more use to them. And that was all set up by IG Farben, an umbrella group that comprised the IBM and all the big internationalists that still run their big plants across the planet today. It's the same techniques that's being used. And these guys have so many professional, full-time organizations and think tanks working in every part of their scheme. But to be honest with you, you can't fight it by using democracy.
It's just, so really, the actual answer is to go individually ahead
mm-hmm.
and try to create a small individual community around you that can help you insulate and weather through.
That's it.
That's the only way.
That's it. Right? That's all you can do. Yeah.
Okay.
That's all you can do. And
thank
but you
so
have
much.
To make sure that you have no. See, once you enter a political agenda, someone's then trying to take it over. So that
yeah.
any organization you stepped up to combat this is infiltrated. I know some of the 9/11 truthers in Canada, in some places, they were taken over very quickly by hardworking people. Actually, they send in hard workers that do all the volunteering, they end up being the top of it, and then they put them all into climate change and standing up for the government's got to do some of the climate change. They completely change where you're heading. What you need are people who are trustworthy, who will truly help each other out in times of stress, and know that there's just the preservation will depend upon each other.
Thank you so much for that encouragement, and God bless you, Alan.
Well, you take care, and don't be too disheartened. We're all going through it. Back with more after this break.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Alan Watt, and we're cutting through the matrix. And before taking the next caller, I'm going to put up a bunch of PDF links for you tonight. We can go right into a lot of the big foundations and organizations that are working with this global agenda, and you can see for yourselves just how far ahead they are in every aspect of your life and what they're bringing to pass for their planned future and the kind of funding they get from it. I'll give an example of the Winslow Foundation. Here's what they hand out to NGOs alone. For the year ending 2001, they had $30,994,490 to dish out to NGO groups. That's just one foundation amongst 1,000 of them. Now there's Kevin from Ontario on the line. Are you there, Kevin?
Well, I'm all there this time, I think.
Well, that's good news. Spring is coming.
Well, yeah, spring is coming, and I'm going back home for a week next week, so I guess my sanity is slowly coming back to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're really planning on this whole big order out of chaos, and I think the revolution is starting to trickle above the surface here. And there's one fellow that was on this chat program called Pal Talk. That was, I opened up a room the other day. I don't know where this guy came from. Never seen him before. Said that the first thing that's going to go down, you know, the whole martial law system and the revolution is going to really start is when the communication systems go down. And with this whole cyber attack nonsense that's going on, I think they're getting ready to do that in the near future.
They might, but to be honest with you, I'm not even worried about that. I don't go by. Like, so that stuff's in the mainstream anyway, that kind of
mm-hmm.
stuff. Is it
going? Yeah.
We're always under cyber attack by our own government agencies.
Oh, yeah.
That's a cyber attack that goes on.
I'm expecting that all communications are going to go down, and they're going to, with the exception of maybe a couple mainstream media news channels, of course, they're going to leave those up there, you know, to brainwash the rest of the sheeple out there.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to claim it's a huge coordinated attack by Iran and China or whatever. Just to give them a reason to go to war and to declare martial law, you know.
You don't even need that to go to war, to
no.
be honest. With
no,
the
I don't.
Now is, in fact, that, see, when you read the report that was put out by the New American Century Policy Group back at before 2001, they published it, but 1997 they published it by Wolfowitz, and they had all the countries that they had earmarked for looting, starting with Afghanistan to be followed with Iraq, then Iran, and then Syria. We've still got
yep.
Syria to go yet. And that
yep.
we've actually gone along in that perfect order right up till now, and once they're finished with Iran, they'll go into Syria as well. That whole, the whole world is to come under their dominion, you understand, and the big boys are the first in. We build the new refineries for them by our tax money, and then it's handed over to the big boys. I've even read the articles from mainstream where that's happened.
Yep.
This is all planned out, and they don't even need to give us any much of a scare now. They'll use scares only if they start going to sleep, to be honest with you. If they
yep.
think we're just too jaded and we're fed up with the movies we're watching and all the porno, and they'll give us a big scare then just to get us back on track, because when we're terrified, we turn to them like they abused
yeah.
technique. Yeah.
I've noticed a lot of these truth chat rooms, they've been growing in number. And yeah, I do see a revolution coming, and good old nice Taurus, I think he's getting impatient for a revolution to start pretty soon there.
Well, there are people out there that are. And as you say, the big boys expect that themselves.
Yeah.
Come what may, the fact is we're going through hell and we've got more to go. You always do before you start seeing the light at the end of the tunnel.
Exactly.
Thanks for calling from Hamish and myself, Monsieur Canada. It's good night, and your God or your gods go with you.